What happens when you wake up in a hospital and strangers know more about what happened to your body than you do? January 2015 shattered Chanel Miller's world in ways she couldn't yet comprehend. At 22, she became Emily Doe, a name that would echo across courtrooms and headlines while her real identity disappeared. Two Swedish graduate students found her unconscious behind a dumpster at a Stanford fraternity party, her attacker fleeing when they intervened. Within days, she'd learn intimate details of her assault, not from her own memory, but from police reports and news articles. The nurses who examined her moved with quiet compassion, never mistaking her stillness for weakness. They understood something profound. Sometimes surrender isn't defeat. It's the only way to survive the moment. This became Miller's reality for years, living split between the person the world saw and the one she was desperately trying to remain. Miller built what she calls a fragile toothpick and marshmallow replica of adulthood. She worked at a tech startup, discussed spreadsheets and building credit, ate Fosh yogurt. Her vocabulary had no room for words like rape or trauma. But bodies remember what minds try to forget. Strange bruises bloomed on her skin. She woke at 4 a.m. to bike beneath oak trees. Her skin stung after showers as if bees with little teeth were chewing her flesh. When she read the police report, she discovered she'd been digitally penetrated while unconscious, dress pulled up, underwear removed, hair matted with pine needles. So she created Emily Doe, a protective shell to contain the pain. Emily attended court dates and spoke to prosecutors. Chanel went to work, had dinner with friends, tried to smile. The split felt necessary, like separating toxic waste from living tissue. But you can't compartmentalize trauma forever. Eventually, the walls collapse. The cruelest irony? People seemed angrier that Miller had made herself vulnerable than that Brock Turner had violated it. Online comments dissected her choices, while his swimming achievements dominated headlines. His defense claimed she seemed to enjoy the activity, forcing Miller to confront a horrifying reality. He would claim consent, force moans in my mouth, and assign me lecherous behavior. Being unconscious still left room for questions, as if passing out was more reprehensible than assaulting someone who had. Meeting prosecutor Alalay, Miller sat between her parents in a sealed fourth-floor office, glimpsing ordinary life through the window, treetops, Molly Stone's market below. She realized with growing dread how little she understood what she'd agreed to. Would drinking again mean she was never affected? Would smiling in photos prove she never suffered? The prosecution wasn't just building a case, it was curating a victim. Lucas entered Miller's life with disarming ease, tall, confident, worldly. A few months in, he said, "I love you," casually. She deflected, wary of pain. When she finally told him about the assault, downplaying it with forced lightness, he simply said, "I knew it. I should have stayed on the phone with you." They lay together for hours. "No matter what happens, I'm here." Lucas later admitted he'd read the police reports mid-flight and vomited in the airplane bathroom. When Miller recently asked how he could date her through everything, he said, "Because you." When pressed about the assault, "What about you as you?" This became her anchor, someone who saw her wholeness when the world saw only brokenness. During trial, while Lucas attended Wharton, Miller spent days in their Philadelphia apartment, occasionally venturing out for haircuts or coffee, small acts proving life existed beyond her case. Unexpectedly, she found healing at Lucas's campus comedy club, transforming pain into carefully crafted jokes. The night she performed, she wore the same oatmeal sweater from court, uniting victim and survivor. For 10 minutes, she commanded the room. Afterward, strangers approached with genuine appreciation, not awkward pity. March 2016 brought Miller back to Palo Alto, retreating to her childhood bedroom, avoiding friends with work as her excuse rather than trial. She learned sexual assault survivors were barred from juries, 12 strangers whose unanimous vote would decide her fate. Women weren't preferred. They often resisted empathizing, thinking, "That would never happen to me." When her testimony day arrived, Miller entered the packed courtroom, eyes fixed on her feet. Initially, she managed well, even smiling discussing her sister. But describing the hospital, she broke completely. The defense repeatedly objected hearsay when she explained learning she might have been assaulted. Describing her panic about her missing sister, she released guttural wails, forcing a recess. The jury found Turner guilty on all three counts. Miller rushed to therapy, expecting to celebrate, but instead spilled everything in a torrent, realizing the verdict hadn't erased what came before. Media still framed Turner as having lost something valuable. The Washington Post mourning his once promising future and extraordinary yet brief swim career now tarnished like a rusting trophy. Miller wrote a 28-page victim impact statement, spending 9 hours confronting every painful memory. In court, she read it loudly, looking directly at the judge, pointing at the defense attorney and Turner's stoic profile. Her power returned. Then Turner's father stood, lamenting his son would never again be his happy-go-lucky self, calling the assault 20 minutes of action. The judge announced 6 months in county jail. Miller was devastated. When BuzzFeed published her statement the next afternoon, it reached 15,000 views within 20 minutes. By Friday, over 15 million. It was read on CNN, translated into multiple languages, performed in sign language. Joe Biden wrote her personally, "I see you." Though read 18 million times, Miller remained anonymous, creating safe space for survivors to heal. New California legislation passed preventing similar sentencing outcomes. Her silence amplified countless voices. September 4, 2019. Chanel Miller stepped out of anonymity. "Know My Name" wasn't just a book title. It was a declaration, a refusal to remain Emily Doe or the Stanford victim. She'd moved to San Francisco with Lucas, fostering elderly dogs from Muttville, Blind Puffin in green socks, Butch, who peed on toilets, Wandering Remy. They eventually adopted Mogu, an 8-pound Pomeranian she describes as a joyful loofah with tiny teeth. She realized she didn't need higher gates. She could build security within herself. Writing meant reviewing hundreds of pages of court transcripts, fighting the voice saying she was damaged. She developed the lag, evaluating every moment before living it, constantly anticipating judgment from an invisible jury. August 2018 brought Turner's appeal denial. 3 years and 8 months after that January night, the case closed. Writing allowed her to stay in the hurt until there was nothing left to gather. By sharing intimate struggles with shame and anger, she created a blueprint for survivors to reclaim their stories. "I began this story alone as a half-naked body with no memory, and survived because I remained soft, because I wrote, because I protected my truth like a tiny flame in a terrible storm."